Welcome to The Point. I'm Indy Todd. Today, our final conversation of the gardening season with horticulturist and entomologist Roberta Clark. Good morning.
Morning.
So, Roberta, it has been a really dry summer. Let's talk a little bit about the impacts that's had on the gardens.
Well, you know, I've lived on Cape Cod since 1980, and we've gone through very dry summers before, but I can't remember one that has been as long a dry spell as this particular summer. We are actually officially classified, if you go to the U.S. Drought Monitor and go to Massachusetts, we are officially classified as being in a severe drought here on Cape Cod, as well as much of southeastern Massachusetts. I was doing really well with the garden up until probably early to mid-August, when I realized that I was just locked into this cycle of watering, and I watered 90 minutes to 2 hours at a time, but I was doing it like almost every other day, just every day part of my yard was being watered. And it was barely scratching the surface. The areas would look good for a day or two and then wilt again. I threw in the towel. I've never done that before.
Yeah, I did too. Yeah. I did too. And about the same time it was like, okay, you know, we've got, we're being asked to conserve water in
yes.
Falmouth anyway. They're saying, no, you have to turn off the automatic, waterers, but you know, you're thinking same thing. I stopped and I'm looking at, you know, my flocks all brown and, but a lot of that stuff will bounce back, right?
Well, I'm hoping it will.
I mean, in the spring.
I like to be an optimist. You know, it was the combination of not just the lack of rainfall. We really haven't had significant rain since late May, early June. I mean, we had somewhat last week, but here in my rain gauge, it was 0.38 of an inch.
Yeah.
So not even half an inch of rain, which is totally inadequate. And but it was the heat, you know, when that long stretch of really just beastly hot weather combined with really, really, really dry soil, it's just the plants took a hit. I actually have crispy plants, you know,
me too.
That I think I will lose. I have three shrubs
and
one small tree in particular. And I'm trying to look on it as an opportunity to, you know, maybe do something different next year. But on a whole, I think things are going to be okay if we get into a pattern of regular rainfall, which we normally do in September. But here it is, what, the 15th?
Right.
And that hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
Initially, we were told by the meteorologist that the remnants of Hurricane Sally would give us a good rain this weekend. They were projecting here on the Cape well over an inch, and now we're not going to get anything. it's difficult.
With some of the trees that are starting to lose their leaves or brown a little bit, should we, where you can water, because as I said, we do have water bans in effect. What do we need to do to help some of these trees through the winter, you know, as we get into the fall? And
as
how do we know
further into
if they're
the
stressed?
Fall, if we can, if we're not under, you know, pretty heavy restrictions, particularly broadleafed evergreens like rhododendrons, we really need to give them deep soakings, well up until the time the ground begins to freeze. I think of all the plants that may suffer the most are the broadleafed evergreens. I mean, the deciduous trees will, you know, they drop their leaves and sort of get through it all. It's a sort of a self-defense mechanism in a way. But the rhododendrons and the hollies and things like that hold on to their leaves, and I think they suffer the most from drought. So if you can, keep your broadleafed evergreens well watered, and they should be able to come through the winter in good fashion. Hopefully we will get into some rain and, dare I say it, snow. We didn't have any last year. But we did have adequate rain up until the end of May, and then it just stopped.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I guess looking at the positive side of this, this as you look around your garden, you're seeing what is drought and heat tolerant.
Absolutely. I have to confess, I've already started the fall cleanup.
You know, I haven't really, you know, I debate this every year. I don't like to clean up completely because I do like to leave something for the birds and, you know, what have you through the winter. So, you know, I'll rake up some leaves and whatnot, but I leave a lot of the, you know, the you know, like the echinaceas and things like that. I just leave for the birds to enjoy. 866-999-4626 is our number for your gardening questions this morning. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. You know, one of the things I have done, because, you know, as everything dies back and you forget sometimes what is planted where. So I've gone around and taken some pictures, especially of areas that I think are a little too crowded on what I might need to move because I can't do everything at once.
Exactly.
So that I'll at least have an idea of, you know, sort of a plan, if you will. And one thing that I did is I pulled out a section that was the, you know, Stella d'Oro daylilies. I pulled that whole little area out and I replaced it with Japanese anemone because that's an area, it's a lot of hosta there and it's doesn't have a lot of blooms this time of year. So I'm trying to look to expand, you know, where I have some color in the garden. And that's not a plant I was really all that familiar with before, but it's absolutely lovely.
They are lovely. And there's a wide variety of cultivars available. Generally, they come either white or in various shades of pale pink. And they are just lovely, lovely plants that begin to bloom at this time of the year. As I look out in my yard, I actually still have phlox that's blooming, and it's blooming in shaded areas, which is surprising. The ones in the sun that got so very dry, I've basically cut them down. I have a wonderful heptacodium, which is a very large shrub that's just coming into bloom now. So I do like to have things that continue to provide me with color into the late fall. I think it's hard to say what kind of a fall foliage year we're going to have.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mainly because it's so dry, you know. So it's weird.
Yeah, you need some rain for sure to make the colors. Yeah, my apple trees already started losing leaves, you know, looking up and seeing just the apples hanging there with many of the leaves already falling off because of how dry it is.
Yeah, I have a katsura that is lovely and normally is just starting to turn a beautiful golden color and it will shed its leaves in a few weeks. It's already almost totally defoliated.
Mm, yeah. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We have a question from Molly. She actually asked this question 2 weeks ago on a show that wasn't, we didn't have the answer to. So we're hoping you know the answer to this, Roberta.
Okay.
She wants to know about the milkweed tussock moth. She says she's recently seeing butterfly weed and other plants completely decimated by this caterpillar. She wants to save the plants, and she says, but I'm also wondering if these moths are native or otherwise worth supporting more than these flower beds.
Well, I'm not all that familiar with that specific tussock moth, but there's a whole range of tussock moth caterpillars. They tend to be furry with usual some projections coming off the head or the rear end. Some of them, the spines can cause an irritating rash if you try to handle them, so generally you don't handle the tussock moths. If they're decimating her plants and she favors the plants, then some Cap'n Jacks or BT would take care of them. I haven't had them to be a problem on my milkweed. I have other pests on milkweed bugs, and the aphid that gets on the milkweed, and I don't do anything. I just let them do their thing.
Yeah, it's same thing. And I have seen very few monarch butterflies this year. We have one, we found one caterpillar, and I've actually moved my little butterfly house outdoors because I guess there's some research that shows if you raise them indoors, it somehow messes up with their migration. So we're doing it outdoors.
Oh, that's good.
We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I did mine. I had a box last year outdoors on my deck where I raised them. This year, I have to concur, I have seen very few monarchs, and I have found no caterpillars on my swamp milkweed plants.
Me too.
So I don't know if they run in cycles, you know, because last year was a banner year. I had tons of them.
Yeah, for sure.
And this year, very little. So it's very, very difficult to say why. I can only hope next year I start seeing more of them.
For sure. Tom in Barnstable says, who do you rely on for your weather information?
For local information, there's a great weather site. It's a CapeCodWeather.net. Phil Burt is the guy who runs it, and he's usually very accurate. I go to the National Weather Bureau to look for trends. I look at the three-month forecast. And of course, you have to realize 3 months out is a long time. And I listen to the local, mainly Harvey Leonard on Channel 5.
Yeah. No, Harvey's great. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so is Phil Burt. You're right. And what's interesting is, you know, when with the TV, Boston and Providence TV stations, they have a tendency to forget about us most of the year, right? And our weather can be a little bit different. So, yeah, Phil Burt does a great job of you know,
he's right focusing in on our area. Local stuff. Yeah, and you're right. As much as I love Harvey Leonard, he generally somehow his forecasts seem to stop at the canal sometimes. And so I'm going, what about us? You know.
Yeah, so true.
So I do follow Phil Burt, and he's got a great little website, and his weather is always very accurate.
Yeah. Let's talk to Caroline, who's calling from Falmouth. Hi, Caroline.
Hi.
Good morning.
I have some amaryllis, and they've been outside all summer in pots, and I would like to bring them in and encourage them to bloom. I've read a variety of different things. I've left them in the past in their pots, let them dry out for, 8 weeks, and then try to bring them back, but they never bloom until like March or April, and I'm wondering how I can hurry that up.
When you bring them in, where do you keep them?
Well, I keep them in a room that stays, you know, not cool enough, probably.
That's exactly what I was getting at. The recommendations that I've seen are basically if you have a cool basement, which I do, my basement, in fact, in the winter is downright cold, to put them down in the basement or in your garage where the bulb will be subject to some chilling temperatures. And then bring them, you know, when you want them to bloom, bring them in like several weeks ahead of time if you're trying to get them to bloom at Christmas and water them, and that should do the trick, fertilize them as well. I'm not particular about when mine bloom. In fact, I have one with a big bud on it now that's going to bloom. They're still outside. And at this point, I let them go dry. I stop watering them. So I think if you stop watering them, let them go dry, put them in your basement where it's very chilly, you might have better luck at getting them to bloom for the holidays.
Yeah. All right.
Okay. And one more question.
Sure.
I read something about earlier about taking them out of the pot and letting them dry, storing them in a cool place, and then repotting them when you want. So I've taken mine out of their pots.
That's perfectly acceptable. You can do it both ways. I generally leave mine in the pot because I'm lazy.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for the phone call.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for calling. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll have more after break. You're listening to The Point. We're talking with horticulturist and entomologist Roberta Clark. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. And Bibi from West Tisbury is on the line. Hi, Bibi.
Well, good morning. This is fun. I wanted to talk about critters burrowing below our lawn.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. And, you know, it's not like a fancy lawn, but we've been here almost 30 years, and we've had, you know, a tunnel or two. I wondered if the drought has maybe caused more. We don't know if they're voles. We see chipmunks. We know they're around.
Yeah.
Anyway, and also if you have any suggestions, I mean, I don't want to just put a hose down in the tunnels, but I read somewhere they're like 3 feet underground. I mean,
Chipmunks actually build a very elaborate burrow system where they have, it goes fairly deep. They have several entrances or exits. They have actually a couple of rooms. They're sort of denning area and another area that's sort of a storage room. It's really, if you Google it, you can get sort of a schematic of a generalized chipmunk burrow. It's really quite interesting. Voles also live underground and can disrupt the lawn to a certain extent. Voles tend to eat roots, so that's sort of a problem. Shrews live underground. They eat insects, so they're more of a maybe, I don't want to say beneficial, but, you know, if they're eating grubs, they're doing a good thing down there. I generally don't. There are traps you can use. I generally live and let live, and as far as that goes, I have more of a problem with mice coming in my house than the critters that are out in my yard. And I have to say, the drought has done a real number on my lawn. Once I stopped watering, I'd like to go out and do some overseeding, but if it's so dry, what's the point? So I'm not sure what I'm going to do. But I frankly, the drought may be impacting the animals as much as it is the plants, because they certainly all need water to live, and there's none available.
Mm. Yeah. All right. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Yep. Thank you for the call. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Edwina says, I have a Japanese maple that is being stripped of bark. She sent a photo. There are perhaps five areas like this on the tree. Any ideas?
And what does it look like?
You know, it's the bark is stripped, and it looks like there are some, I don't know, sort of dark brown spots. I can't tell what they are. I'll send you the photo. But
okay. Does it look like it's a young tree?
You know, she didn't send the whole tree. It's just sort of a section of it. But
okay,
I sent you the photo,
so
you can take a look.
Yeah. I have had actual rabbits on young trees that have thin bark, and they've done this on Coosa dogwoods, young Coosa dogwoods. They've done this on Japanese maples. They actually gnaw on the bark, and I don't know if they're trying to get moisture from the sap, but they can do a lot of damage. It may be some sort of animal that's doing the damage. Without seeing it, I'm only guessing.
Yeah. Yeah. I did send you the photo. Maybe you can take a look at it in the next break or something.
Okay.
You mentioned the dogwood. I have a variegated dogwood, and I noticed that on the bottom where it's just, and it's only been there for a few years, as new branches and leaves come out, it seems like it's trying to revert back to not being variegated. I actually just snip those off.
That's exactly what you should do.
Exactly.
Where are they coming from? The base?
Base, yep.
Yeah. It's probably a grafted plant. Most of the variegated plants are grafted onto standard rootstock, and so anything that comes up from the roots below the graft union will be coming from the rootstock, which is green. So, yes, the thing to do, as soon as you see those, just prune them right out.
Yeah. Another interesting thing, I have an evergreen tree, and, you know, there was a tarp that got left there, and I've been noticing a whole bunch of bees and flies. And I thought, what could they possibly be doing? I thought maybe the bees were underneath the tarp. But as I'm looking, I'm noticing on the bottom, on the ground there, a lot of like black sap, and black sap sort of running down the tree. That's what they're after, right?
I would guess that would be true, because if it's sap or honeydew from a scale insect or something, it's high in sugars, and they would be going after that. You know, at this time of year, if you're out there with a soda or something, you've got, you know, yellow jackets and other critters coming for your soda because it's sugary. So I would imagine if that's sap, it's high in sugars, and that's what they're after.
Yeah, I'm just going to stay away from there for a while.
That would be my approach.
The tarp can stay there until it gets cold. Why not, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Sarah's calling from Edgartown. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. I've got Japanese knotweed, which found its place in amongst the roots of my rhododendrons. And it hasn't spread invasively, but I'm trying to head it off with Bonide Brush Killer, BK32, following directions from online and basically cutting off the top of the plant and then putting the stem in the brush killer and letting it drink.
Have you seen the result?
I haven't yet. That's what I'm calling you about.
Yeah, and how long has it been since you treated it?
Yesterday.
Okay. I think you need to be a little more patient. it will probably be effective. Although, what did the instructions on the actual label say? Did it say to treat the leaves or cut the stems?
Well, spray.
Yeah, it may be that it's absorbed through foliage rather than through a cut stem. So, you might check it for a few days. It may be effective. It may be you need to do a second treatment if you get some more leaves. Definitely get rid of it, because if it just popped up this year, it's probably not a lot. But that stuff is unbelievably invasive and very, very, very difficult to eradicate. I used to recommend Roundup, which I don't anymore, but even that had difficulty managing it. And I believe in Great Britain, it's like their number one plant that's banned.
It is their number one thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It's, yeah, very invasive. Like Sarah, phosphate. Good luck. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank
you're welcome.
Thank you. All right. Linda is calling from Mashpee. Hi, Linda.
Hi, good morning. Thank you so much for taking my call, Roberta, and the nice lady here. I didn't get your name. My husband and I have been on the Cape for, we're going on 6 years, and we're new to gardening. And we moved into a home that has, you know, some established plantings, but we want to add plantings that are pollinator types of plants and, you know, berry-bearing bushes and trees for the for the birds. We're all about, you know, supporting the wildlife.
Sure.
So, number one, I was wondering if Roberta did any kind of consulting, you know, in terms of coming out and looking at the property and helping us, you know, with ideas and suggestions about plantings. So really that's the basis of my call. I also love hummingbirds, and I was just at Mahoney's yesterday looking at honeysuckle and wondering, you know, the hardiness of it and, you know, basically where to plant it. I was told that it climbs.
It is a vine. Actually, I don't do consulting. I'm a retired horticulturist and have all I can do to maintain my own gardens. So I generally do not do consulting. But there are a number of very talented people that are available in that regard, particularly C.L. Frenari. She does come out and do consulting for a fee. And in terms of C.L. Frenari.
Yeah. And if you Google her, you'll go right to her. I think the Garden Ladies, you'll go right to
the
her.
The Garden
website.
Lady. Yeah. And she's great. I highly recommend her. In terms of planting for pollinators, right now is an excellent time to visit your favorite garden center. Garden centers are having big fall sales on nursery crops because they don't want to overwinter them, so they'd love to sell their stock before winter comes in. So this is an excellent time to visit a nursery, talk to a horticulturist on staff, and see what is available that provides berries during the fall or flowers during the spring that pollinators and critters love. In terms of honeysuckle, that's one of my favorite plants. Various varieties of our native honeysuckle, not the Japanese, which is invasive, but the native honeysuckle. They are vines, so they do need some sort of support. I have 6 different ones in my yard going up various trellises and on the fence in my front yard, and the hummingbirds are still visiting. They bloom. They're not in massive bloom right now, but they have a big bloom in summer, and then they bloom sporadically until frost. So I still have hummingbirds visiting. And so those are an excellent choice for hummingbirds.
Yeah. Linda,
is there
good
any
luck.
Particular one? Oh, thank you. I don't want to take too much time. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it, Roberta.
Yeah,
you're
Linda,
welcome.
Keep us posted. Give us a call in the spring when we bring the garden show back and let us know how you're doing with your garden. We'd love to hear what you decide to do. Thanks for the call. Yep, great. Let's talk to Dagmar, who's calling from Harwich. Hi, Dagmar.
Good morning. I had a terrible problem with the Japanese beetles.
Uh-huh.
They attack all my cone flowers. Then they went for the roses. Mm-hmm. I went every night and picked them and put them in soapy water that worked. And during the morning, I was digging and finding tons of them. Then I decided to cut the plants. And since they didn't have the cone flowers to eat, they went to other plants and attacked them. So what can I do for next spring?
The Japanese beetles are problematic in a couple of ways. They adults feed on foliage, and they have certain plants that they absolutely love, so you'll always find them on those. They also lay their eggs in grassy areas, and their larvae, the grubs, feed on grass roots. So it's a good idea to get rid of them. You can do just what you did, which is mechanically collecting them and putting them in some soapy water. There are a number of insecticides on the market that will effectively control them. You have to use them carefully so you're not affecting pollinators at the same time. The one thing I would recommend not to do is to use a Japanese beetle trap. Those have been shown by research to actually attract more Japanese beetles to an area, and they're quite happy to feed on plants on their way to the trap. So I would visit your local garden center and again, talk to someone in the department that has management materials and see what they suggest. There are several different insecticides that will work effectively, but that you have to use them properly.
All right. Dagmar, good luck. Thanks for
the
phone call.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Bet. Okay, thank you.
866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Alice says, I received a plant from a coworker in the spring and planted them. They are now flowering. I was wondering if you can help me identify. She doesn't send a picture. She says they're really tall, over 5 feet. Not much foliage, very thin but beautiful yellow daisy look like flowers. Beautiful towering high right now. Some sort of a sunflower, do you think?
Well, possibly, but there are, the one that pops in my mind is Rudbeckia herbstone, Rudbeckia autumn sun is the sort of translation. It's Rudbeckia, I believe it's lanceolata, has a lot of foliage at the base, but it sends up these very, very tall stalks. They can get 5, 6, 7 feet tall. Ooh. If they like where they are, and have a beautiful golden Rudbeckia flower with a golden center, not a brown center. They're really quite beautiful, and they're very tall, and that's possibly what they could be. Without a picture, I'm only guessing.
Yeah. Right. All right. Peter in Yarmouth says, when is the best month of the year to prune an overgrown beauty bush? What is the generic name of that woody shrub, and does keeping a Christmas cactus outdoors as long as possible help it bloom better?
Okay, beauty bush is Colquitzia, Colquizia, I believe, or something like that. I'm probably spelt it wrong, but it's Colquitzia. Mm-hmm. And it's a lovely shrub with beautiful flowers in spring, and it does get quite large. There are two ways to approach that. If you want to do a renovation, the best way to prune it is in early spring while it's still dormant, sometime in March. That way you can see what you're doing if it's a very large shrub, and you can make your cuts at appropriate places and reduce it in size. The side effect of that is you're probably going to lose the bloom for a year, but you've brought it down into a more manageable size. The other way to approach it is wait till it blooms and then go in and prune it back as hard as you'd like after bloom.
And what about the Christmas cactus?
Christmas, oh yes. I leave mine outside. All my plants are still outside. Generally, I don't bring plants in until the nighttime temperatures are in the low 50s, occasionally even the upper 40s. We did have one morning last week where it was 49 here at my house. So I usually bring them in sometimes towards the end of September, early October.
And is
all
there any
on the nighttime temperatures?
Right. And we talk a lot in the spring about bringing them out and having to harden them as you bring them out. Is there any rule of thumb when you bring them in?
Generally, when you bring houseplants in, I take a good look at them. If they have some insect problems, if they've picked up mealybugs or something like that over their summer vacation, I'll clean them up and use a houseplant insecticide on them. I also, in recent years, because I'm trying to simplify my life, not successfully, but I'm trying, I make very hard value judgments. Is this plant still bringing me as much joy as it once did? Does it still look as good as it used to? And if the answer is no, I'm composting them.
Yeah.
You know, it's life's all about making choices sometimes, and I have. You know, it ends up every window in my house has multiple potted plants in front of it in the winter.
I have so much room.
Exactly. But I like to examine them if they've been out and they've maybe picked up a plant, you know, pest, get rid of the pest before you bring them in. Indoor plants, when they're indoors, even if you have them in the sunniest window in your house, the quality of the light is not the same as direct sunlight outside, because it's filtered through a window, through a screen. And also, I'm sure everyone has noticed, the days are getting much shorter.
Yes, they are.
So the length of light is different. So you can expect that plants will not grow as well as they do during the summer. Some of the leaves will turn yellow and fall off. That's absolutely normal. And you need to be careful that you don't overwater your plants when you bring them inside. because they're not actively growing in the winter. They're basically just sort of hanging out for the winter.
Yeah.
I also don't fertilize houseplants in the winter, except for orchids. Mm. Orchids are a totally different group of plants.
You know, I mentioned this a couple months ago, I think. I bought an orchid in December, and that thing is still blooming. I think it's on its last go-round right now. And
isn't
I have
wonderful?
Not fertilized it. I have not done anything except water it. I don't know what they used on this thing, but I can't believe it's lasted this long. It's amazing.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Orchids are pretty... You know, before I started growing them, I used to think, oh, my God, I can't grow orchids. I'll kill them. And indeed, I killed several in my early attempts to grow them. But they're actually pretty tough plants. Mine are outdoors. They've come through this dry summer with less water than I normally give them. And they look fine. And they'll be outside until, again, the nighttime temperatures are in the low 50s. Many of them right now need repotting, so I will do repotting on my orchids when they come in another couple of weeks. But my other houseplants, generally I wait to spring to do any repotting.
Okay. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We're talking with horticulturist Roberta Clark. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Let's talk to Joan in East Harwich. Hi, Joan. Thanks for holding.
Good morning, ladies. I am standing here glaring at one of my sages. I bought these plants because the hummingbird at the nursery was circling and drinking from the flowers.
And yes.
This plant that I'm glaring at is 3 years old. I bring them in for the winter. And my new pineapple sages that I bought this year, they're not even starting to bloom. What is going wrong?
My pineapple sages are not blooming either. So whatever it is, it's not you. they are very late bloomers, but they usually have started by now. And in fact, after the show, I will go out and look at them. Last time I looked at them, there was no sign of it. It could be drought related. You know, it's just such a weird. Everything is weird this year. You know, you see all these funny memes on social media about 2020, and they're all true. It's just a very strange year. Things are not going as planned or as expected. So be patient, and they may surprise you, but it may be after the hummingbirds have already left to go south.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, because the two purple ones are in bloom.
Uh-huh.
But just barely, the one that I'm glaring at is just barely in bloom, but the other one at the other end of the deck has got lots of flowers on it now that the Hummer left yesterday.
Right. Does one get more sun than the other?
Actually, the one that's in full bloom gets less sun.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Hmm. Huh.
Well, Joan, good luck. We'll keep your fingers crossed. Like you said, it's a weird summer, Roberta. It's like my basil normally gets so big, and it's just remained on the smallest side. I planted in the same spot I planted every year. It's you just don't know.
My basil, I planted, it's funny you should mention that, because I planted just, you know, I had bought 6-pack of basil and planted that, and it's hardly grown at all.
Yeah.
I also planted... I wish I could remember the name. I got it at Soar's Garden Center in Falmouth, and it was a resistant to the downy mildew cultivar. Mm-hmm. And it's been going great guns, and it looks absolutely gorgeous, nice, large, healthy plant. So that's what I've been harvesting from. The other ones are just doing nothing.
Yeah, crazy. Alice wanted to let you know that she Googled the Rebecca Autumn Sun, and that's exactly what her flower looks like. So
excellent.
You got that spot on without a picture.
Excellent.
Let's talk to Diana, who's calling from South Orleans. Hi, Diana.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I am calling about my crepe myrtle shrub that I planted about 4 or 5 years ago, and I planted it on the sunniest corner of our house.
Uh-huh.
Which is still not all that sunny. We're in the woods here, some big oaks all around. But There's a fair amount of sun back there. Anyway, it's beautiful now. It's 8 feet tall, and it has never bloomed until I looked up about a week ago, and one branch, the topmost branch, has lovely whitish-pink flowers on it.
Nice.
Just one branch. But I thought they were supposed to bloom early in the summer.
No, crepe myrtles are late bloomers. Generally, they start blooming in late August, early September. So this would be the time that you would see them in bloom. And some plants, I know dogwoods are like this. Sometimes you buy them in the nursery and they have flowers on them, and you plant them, and then they don't bloom for many years. And it's more a question of them basically maturing in their new location than anything else. The fact that this now is starting to bloom, I'm thinking perhaps from now on you might have a more profuse and more reliable bloom because the plant has matured.
Mm. Well, wouldn't that be nice?
And
so not unusual for it to just start blooming in one place, but then be more profuse later on. I guess my lilac did that as well. It just had a few blooms early on, and now it's more.
Yeah, some plants do that. That's how they grow.
Yeah. All right, Diana, thanks for the call.
That's encouraging.
Judy says, I have what looks like white scale-like spots on some branches of my Harry Lauder's walking stick. I can't pick it off. I know there is an Eastern filbert blight that's attacking some of these, but in pictures it looks black, not white. Any ideas?
Again, without seeing it, I'm guessing, and I'd have to say I don't know.
Okay, that's fine. Right.
But I did look at the pictures of the Japanese maple you sent me, and that does... It looks like there might have been some damage done. I don't know what caused the damage that caused the bark. Because if you look at the edges of the wound on that picture, first of all, the wound is old. You can see where it's starting to callus over. But it looks like the very far edge of the bark is also lifting and peeling. So something damaged the bark, whether it was... a critter or a fungus or something like that, I'm not sure. But the rest of the tree as a whole looks fine.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't worry about it.
All right, we have another email. I ordered 4 new tall bearded German iris yesterday. It wasn't until I received the online delivery confirmation that I knew they would be shipped on October 20th. Is that too late to plant them? Should I cancel the order? That's not too late.
It's not too late.
It's a little bit early right now to start.
Go ahead and plant them. They will be fine and they'll bloom for you next year. The one thing we are blessed with we're blessed with many things on the Cape, but one of them is the fact that we have a fairly extended fall. The ground usually does not freeze until well into November. I don't even plant my garlic until mid to late October, so that's fine. The soil has still got some warmth in it. Just when you do plant them, make sure if we're still in this silly drought, make sure you water them well.
Give them some water, yeah. All right, let's talk to Sharon calling from Falmouth. Hi, Sharon.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
I'm calling because I recently moved to a new location, and I have an existing bank of rhododendrons across the front of the house. And they are not, unfortunately, the Manitonka version. They are large. Right now, they're approximately 5 and a half feet tall. Springtime, I know, is the best time to prune. But I my goal is to prune these about 2 feet. Is that too much? I mean, they're encroaching above the window.
Your best bet is to transplant them somewhere else. They're not appropriate for foundation plantings because they do get so large, and it would just be a constant battle to keep them small. You'd really be better off just transplanting them and putting something smaller there.
There's 6 of them. Yeah,
it's a lot.
So I don't know if I'm going to undertake that. Okay, move on. I do have a second question, if I may.
Okay,
sure.
Go ahead.
Also, I planted back in June, early June, 3 of the small, I forget the name of them, lilac bushes,
Boomerang.
Anyway,
boomerang,
That's it, exactly.
Yep.
and they look horrible. They are not doing well. we have a water ban on, as you probably know, in Falmouth.
Yep.
And I've been hand watering them, several times a week. But anyway, what I want to say is they are 60%+ leaves are brown to black.
Yeah, crispy.
Yep.
Unfortunately, there's not a lot you can do about that. Just keep watering them as best you can. If you run a dehumidifier in your basement when you empty the reservoir, use that to water. That's what I've been watering some of my container plants with on the deck. Keep watering it up until the ground freezes. And just hopefully it will come back in the spring. It may be a little set back, but it should regrow.
Yeah, I'll keep our fingers crossed.
That's my
thanks
big
for
question.
The call. Let's talk to Anna, who's calling from Providence. Hi, Anna.
Hi. I'm calling not with a question, but I'm calling because I heard the person asking about how to deal with Japanese knotweed. Mm-hmm. And I used to be a volunteer with the Providence Parks Department, and I took a course at URI in dealing with invasive plants because we had Japanese knotweed in the park and a whole lot of other things. One thing that I learned there was that if you're using Roundup, you cut the stalks and you almost immediately paint the cut with Roundup before the plant seals over the cut. And that has to be done in the fall because that's when they take things into their roots to store sugars for the winter.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right. Yeah. The place, that is a
work.
Technique. It's a tough plant to manage, you know.
Yeah.
Even then, it would probably need to be repeated the following year.
We could not use Roundup because we were right near a waterway. So we tried something different, which it turned out worked so well that the Parks Department used it in another worse location. And this is what we did. We removed all we removed all the Japanese knotweed, and then we asked the Parks Department to loam and seed, in other words, to create a lawn there, and to agree to mow it every few weeks. And over time, that caused the Japanese knotweed to just give up, and it became weaker and weaker, and finally there's a nice lawn there.
Yeah.
In other areas, if you cut the knotweed back on a regular basis, a frequent basis, eventually it will just die.
That's true. What happens is it's unable to translocate sugars and other materials down to the roots and effectively starves. It's a long, slow process, but it does work.
Yeah, Anna, thanks for the phone call. And I guess that's exactly what we also have to do with our bindweed is you just have to kind of keep pulling it, and hope eventually that it will stop coming back. Yeah, exactly. Roberta Clark joins us for the gardening season. I can't believe that it's September already.
That's right.
Thanks for all your great advice through the season, and let's hope for a nice
good
winter.
A moist winter, but not
a moist, good, yes, exactly. All right, Roberta, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
I'm Minnie Todd. Thank you for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.